You ready to roll?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll start in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to another Baseball America Prospect Handbook podcast. J.J. Cooper and Matt Eddy continuing our running feature of selecting teams from each division's top tens. We're going to be doing the AL East today. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Sorry there's been a little gap there in the podcast, but I hope you can understand. We had the holidays, but really more importantly for us, we had the Prospect Handbook, which kind of consumed everything, I think would be a way to put it. Is that a good way to put it, Matt?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. One a day, so think of it that way. That's 30 days of Prospect Handbook.
Yeah, it was a very, very busy couple of weeks for us, but the handbook is on the way to the printer. We are not that far away from if you ordered it through Baseball America, get your hands on your own Prospect Handbook. It's a reminder, if you haven't ordered one yet, you can still do that, pre-order it now. If you pre-order it through Baseball America, you, in addition to the Prospect Handbook, which is the top, is 900 prospects, plus a 4 prospect appendix of international prospects, you also get we send you a supplement with the 31st prospect in every organization, which some pretty useful names on the 31st team this year, I thought.
Yeah, who stands out to you?
It's
like a lot of potential reserves. I mean,
yeah.
I'll just start with the Diamondbacks. Here's a spoiler. They had Ender Inciarte, the
former Rule 5 pick.
The center fielder whom the Phillies Rule 5'd and kept for one day before returning. but he has a reserve profile.
And not only that, but was added to the 40-man, this year, which made him not Rule 5 eligible this year. I love the Phillies write-up in our org report this time said that they were looking at taking him again if he was available. They would have tried again. But if you want to get your issue and you haven't yet, you know, edition of the Prospect Handbook, go to www.baseballamerica.com/store and fix that right now. And again, if you order it through Baseball America, you're also going to get well in advance of anywhere else, 8 weeks in advance of where you can get it anywhere else. We get the first copies and they go out. And basically, as we get them, they go out.
Before we get going with this draft, why don't we review our 1-1 picks that we've taken so far? I had the first pick in the East, NL East. I took Travis d'Arnaud, as I recall. Then you drew the lucky straw.
Central, that was, I can't remember, Baez was 1, Bryant was 2.
Chris Bryant, you took.
Yeah, so I took Chris Bryant. Baez was 1 in the pick, so I knew I took the Cubs guys. Couldn't remember. I was trying to how to remember which one was the number 2 prospect in that organization. And then went back to the NL West was you.
I took Eddie Butler, Rockies right-hander. And that leaves you with the 1 pick for the AL East.
If you haven't listened to any of these podcasts before, just a reminder, number 1 prospects are off the board. So if you're wondering why we're not taking Dylan Bundy or why we're not taking, you know, Gary Sanchez, it's because by the rules of what we're doing here, they're not available. Again, we kind of touch on this every time. Dylan Bundy definitely would be one of the first guys taken. If we were involving one, Xander Bogaerts would be the first guy taken if we were doing number ones. Gary Sanchez would be taken relatively quickly. Jake Odorizzi, maybe a little longer, but he would again go pretty quickly. And Aaron Sanchez, I think, you know, none of these guys would be sitting on the board very long if we were taking number ones. But we're not taking number ones. So with that, with the first pick of the AL East portion of our draft, I'm going Kevin Gausman.
No.
The Orioles right-hander, number 2 prospect in the Orioles system. And really, I'd say it's a closer 1-2 this year. These guys were 1-2 last year in the Orioles system, but I think it's a closer 1-2 this year, largely because while Kevin Gausman, not particularly effectively, but made it to the big leagues last year, Dylan Bundy missed the year with Tommy John surgery, and he's not back on the mound yet. So it's a little bit closer there as far as which guy you would want to have number 1. Gossman's number 2 on this list. At worst, you're talking about a potentially dominant reliever. Very high, you know, a very good likelihood, though, that he's going to be a solid starter instead. So that's where I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit of an outlier as a right-handed starter without a plus breaking ball. But as you detailed in this year, a pitcher like Michael Wacha, who has a plus fastball and plus command and a plus changeup, can make it work.
Right. Another guy I'll give you is maybe a little bit better breaking ball, but a different type of guy because he's a short guy. But Chris Medlin also has made that approach work. Mm-hmm. So that leads it to the first pick for Matt Eddy. I think I know which way you're going, but I'll be interested to see if I'm right.
This is really tough. Gausman was a guy I wanted. I think I'm going to go with the Red Sox, Henry Owens, the left-hander.
Number two prospect in the Red Sox system.
Swing and miss stuff with potential for 3+ pitches from the left side. He's got control issues now, but the general outline is very good.
Not only that, but he may have had, it's funny, he may have had the best outing that didn't count of the 2013 season. And by season, I mean including spring training. He had an outing in spring training for the Red Sox last year where I want to say like one batter made contact in a four-inning stint. I mean, it was insane. Okay, that leads it back to me. I'm going to go safe. I'm going to go Jackie Bradley, number three prospect in the Red Sox system. A guy who's not going to be, I don't think, a star. I don't know how many All-Star games you're going to see. I don't think he's someone who you're going to see the Red Sox plug him in for Jacoby Ellsbury and get the same production as Ellsbury is best. But I think at the same time, he's a guy who you're not going to be looking to replace either. He's going to be a very solid center fielder. He's going to get on base. He's going to steal some bases. A very productive, a very useful top-of-the-order hitter. I think we're going to see a lot of Red Sox taken in this draft because they have the deepest system, I think, of any of these systems.
Yeah. Okay. With my second pick, I'm going to keep the southpaw trend alive and take Eduardo Rodriguez of the Orioles. Finished the year in Double-A. Like Owens, he's kind of a lean lefty with a chance for 3+. And a bit of trivia in that he'll be the first player signed by the Orioles out of Venezuela to make the major leagues with the Orioles. Probably this season.
That's a damning indictment. We're not talking about the first player the Orioles have signed out of Brazil or the first player they've signed out of the Netherlands to make it. Venezuela is, battles with Canada to be the third most productive country as far as big league talent? Yeah. I mean, it's something. I mean, the Astros for a while, they were producing 3 or 4 guys a year, it felt like, who were making their debuts from Venezuela. To never have had a player who's made his debut who signed out of Venezuela is amazing. I mean, that's hard to imagine. But I like the pick. That leads me. I'm going, again, my fictional team that may never actually, doesn't really actually ever play a game, may have a pretty dominant bullpen depending on things work out, because I'm going to take Marcus Stroman, Blue Jays' number two prospect, hard-throwing right-hander. Really, the big knock against Stroman is he's 5'9". There's not a whole lot of 5'9" starting pitchers in the last 75 years. back from the time when 5'9" was considered, the hulking behemoth.
Old Hoss Radbourne was 5'9".
Yeah, exactly.
The last prolonged starter was, Tom Gordon, maybe, early in his career?
And the thing about it is that when you think of Tom Gordon, you're still talking about a guy who was more a reliever than a starter. Mm-hmm. It's just a hard profile. That doesn't mean he can't do it, but the reason that people are skeptical is that it's hard to think of, when you think of short pitchers, right-handed or left-handed, you generally think of guys who end up working out of the pen. Even if they started coming up, Billy Wagner was a starter all the way through the Astros system. He hit the big leagues, you're the bullpen, and worked out really well for him. I think Gausman has much more likely to stay as a starter than Stroman, but I do think that Stroman's going to get an opportunity to start. But even this year with the Blue Jays, with getting all the guys back from Tommy John surgery like they did, Hutchinson and Drabek and guys like that, there may be a temptation at some point in 2014 to put Stroman in the bullpen, and if they do, he may never come back out. That's the way I'll put it. But I do think that he's going to, at the least, he should be a very solid reliever. And I think he has the stuff to start, again, if you look past the height. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to you.
Yeah, I was looking at him. Now it's a matter of just throw a dart at the Red Sox.
Because, yes, there's a lot of guys.
I think I'm going to bypass one player.
I think number four prospect, Alan Webster, may sit there a while.
He might. Great arm. I just worry about the control and the makeup. I'm going to take Blake Swihart, Red Sox number five. Switch hitting catcher with some field to hit. Hasn't really shown a ton of power production yet, but he has a chance to develop it. Kind of a physical build, catcher, athletic, switch hitter.
It's not bad.
Taking a shot.
I'm going to take another Red Sox, and I'm going really off the board. I'm jumping down to the number 7 Red Sox on the list, Mookie Betts, who I know a lot of Mookie Betts fans around this office. I'm definitely one of those. Talked to a lot of people when I was doing the doing South Atlantic League stuff, and also talked to some scouts who had Carolina League coverage this past year who just could not stop raving about him. He had an amazing season. The thing that jumps out to me, though, is that you're talking about a guy who really controls the strike zone. You know, walked more times than he struck out last year. But and the key thing is to me, is he did that while hitting 15 home runs as well. So This isn't a – I mean, I'm a Mike O'Neill fan. But Mike O'Neill, it's the in purpose almost of when he goes to the plate is to draw a walk. With Mookie Betts, the walk is – I think it's going to translate a little bit more to the big league level because it's partly he just knows the strike zone. He rejects pitches out of the strike zone. But when he gets something in the strike zone, he really can do something with it. Second baseman, you know, there's talk that he may even play some shortstop again this year. I think long-term he probably is a second baseman, but, you know, it could be a plus at second base. I'm pretty excited about having him on the Cooperstown Bound.
And he's your second straight 5'9" draft pick.
Yeah, and I think I also took someone else who was that short earlier in this draft. So I like the short guys, apparently. You can call me the Astros, I guess.
Okay. It's a little trickier here.
Gets a little tougher. To recap while you're deciding, we've taken one Blue Jay, the number 2 prospect, no Rays, no Yankees, and 1, 2, 3, 4 Red Sox. I think, and 2 Orioles. So you've got some choices here to make. Which way are you going?
I think I'm going to enhance my infield depth and take Jonathan Scope, the Curaçao native second baseman / shortstop, more second baseman, but a chance to hit with some power at the Keystone. Probably doesn't have any other pluses, but
he's solid player.
He's a triple A now, and might see him with the Orioles next year. Or this year, I should say.
I'll go with following up on that. I'm going to take another Oriole. I will go Hunter Harvey, who you skipped over at number 4 on the Orioles list. One of the better, it's a bad profile in some ways. North Carolina high school pitcher. Chris Archer is making that look a little better right now, but have been a lot of busts kind of out of that list. But a really good arm, long ways away, but there's some definite upside there. So I'll go that way. I think we can now, when we're saying, you know, a lot of times we kind of decide where we're stopping on this on the fly. We have to take a Ray and a Yankee before we stop. And so continue. And I don't know if that's going to happen yet.
Yeah, I'm going back to the Red Sox. So this is my 5th pick, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take Garin Cecchini, the third baseman. Led the minors in on-base percentage this year. Steady left-handed hitter. May not hit for more than fringe power. And may not stick at third base. But I think you're looking at a high floor player.
Going to get on base.
With a chance to, you know, chance to hit for average, get on base, and maybe play third base in the right situation.
I think I'm sticking with the Red Sox, too. And again, there's a lot of different ways. This Red Sox list has Alan Webster 4. The difference between him and number 10, Trey Ball, just isn't that much. I mean, they're different players, but one's really close, one's really far away. But if you grade them out, there's not a whole lot of separation there really between those. And Anthony Renato, who didn't make this top 10, was number 11 on the Red Sox list. You could make an argument for Anthony Renato 4. I mean, to me, Jackie Bradley, after that, there's this large group of very similarly, you know, close together prospects as far as the variety of, for a variety of ways. With that being the case, I'm going to go Matt Barnes, number 9. Really, probably a little bit of a setback year for him this year. Wasn't as dominant as he's been at times in the past, but again, you're talking about a guy who has at his best some really plus stuff. He's shown some feel for pitching, probably more of a number 3 starter if it all comes together. But a useful arm who's already had double-A time, has been pretty durable. I'll go that way.
Okay. I'm going to take a Ray with my next pick. And it's not... It's actually number three, Taylor Guerrero. I like the upside. However, he's got some pretty significant dings against him.
There's some risk.
Probably foremost, he had Tommy John surgery in the middle of 2013. He's going to serve a 50-game suspension for recreational drug use while he's rehabbing.
The good news for you is you're not going to lose any development time from that because he'll be suspended while he wasn't going to be pitching anyway.
And he had some makeup concerns when he was in high school. However...
That being said,
he throws a pretty nasty sinker. He's got pretty good command for a high school pitcher, a good pitcher's build, and the secondary stuff projects to be at least average. I like him long term. I just think it's a longer term play than some of the other guys we're talking about.
Okay. I'm going to go upside again. I'm going to go another Red Sox, and we are staying away from Allen Webster like the plague. I'm going Trey Ball, the number 10 prospect.
Loading up on 2013 prep arms.
Yeah, I really am. You know, I do think that that was one of the better positions in this this draft, that and college power bats. We don't really have a shot at many of the college power bats here. They're gone elsewhere. But Ball, I do think, is an athletic left-hander. You know, three pitches if it all comes together, and so far away. I mean, really, he threw seven innings. You know, not seven poor innings. Let me also preface by saying seven poor innings in the GCL.
He's got no chance.
So long ways away, but again, if it all comes together, it could be pretty special.
Okay, let's review some of the players who are left on the board.
Okay, again, in the Red Sox, we only have, by the rules of this, we can't take Anthony Renato. He didn't make the top 10. So Allen Webster and Brandon Workman are it. That's it. That's all that's left. Go to the Yankees. They're all available. Slade Heathcott, Mason Williams, J.R. Murphy, Eric Gilo, Aaron Judge, Ian Clarkin. You can go whichever way you want there. With the Rays, Hak-Ju Lee, who's coming off of ACL. Inny Romero, who I do kind of like, who throws hard.
Mm-hmm.
I skipped the Orioles. Sorry, Orioles fans. We still have Tim Barry and Yuri Urrutia, Mike Wright available for the Orioles. Go back to the Blue Jays. You got all kind of upside, potential upside. DJ Davis, Mitch Ney, Franklin Barreto, Daniel Norris, Roberto Osuna, Dawell Lugo. You know, you've got... So those are kind of what we're looking at. Which way are you going?
I think I'm going to take Mason Williams here.
And here we go. So we have fulfilled our needs.
He's the Yankees' number three. He was their number one guy last year when he looked like a five-tool center fielder. You know, he put on some weight this year.
The tools kind of were lost under a little bit of fat this year, is the best way to put it.
His lower half thickened up, so now there's questions about where he fits defensively. And the power still doesn't come on. You know, he doesn't steal a lot of bases. So,
but other than that,
there's a lot of risk involved, but you know, he's still a left-handed hitting center fielder who has flashed all five tools in the past.
No, I think, you know, I think we will wrap up at that point. We have drafted a Ray, we have drafted a Yankee. Thank you for doing both of those.
who would be next for you? Like, if you had,
I probably would take Heathcott next. I've always been a Slade Heathcott fan.
Mm-hmm.
Really, there's been a lot of concerns with Slade Heathcott, and legitimate concerns about he doesn't get 500 at bats in a season,
mm-hmm.
and there's some legitimate concern about whether he ever will, because Slade Heathcott, I'm going way back for this comp, but Pete Reiser with the Dodgers going, you know, back in the 40s, Pete Reiser could have been, like, he was considered a potential star, but he couldn't stop running into brick walls trying to catch, you know, fly balls. That's kind of Slade Heathcott's problem. Slade Heathcott plays all out at all times. Slade Heathcott's the kind of guy who the new rule about not running over catchers is really going to be a disappointment for him, because if a catcher's got, you know, trying to block the plate, Slade Heathcott's going to try to run through him. That kind of all-out approach, it's really been hard for him to stay healthy with that. You know, because of that, that's kind of limited. That really does limit his upside a little bit, just from the standpoint of when it's one time, you say, okay, it's one thing. But when it's year after year, you start to think, no, maybe this guy's just not going to stay healthy.
And I believe he's had surgery on both shoulders.
Yes.
So he's had knee problems, too.
And, you know, and then he had some well-publicized, you know, it's behind him, it appears, but some well-publicized, you know, problems with alcohol, you know, a while back. There's some risk there.
Yeah, Hak-Ju Lee would have been more attractive to me But you're talking about a guy with 20 power coming off a major knee injury.
It does concern me when you have a guy in Hakju Lee's case who his entire, it's one thing if you have like a torn ACL and you're a slugging, first baseman. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's probably not going to affect you that much. Hakju Lee's entire game is speed, agility. Mm-hmm. It may be. I mean, ACL, you see a lot of, Adrian Peterson in the NFL had no real problems coming back from that. And that requires more speed and agility than being a shortstop. But that being said, we haven't seen him come back from it yet. You kind of want to see that really before, you really want to buy in on a guy who, again, that's what his selling point is,
If you were going to shoot the moon on one of these Blue Jays guys, what do you take? Because we're talking about
the highest
level any of the Blue Jays 3 to 10 played at was low A Lansing. It's just all upside.
It is all upside. We jokingly said when we were doing Daniel Norris did have one game at high A.
I've seen that. And Nolan actually has major league experience.
But they almost break the scale as far as risk. Because it's all high upside, so far away. If it all comes together, they could be all-star kind of guys. Like, the Rangers have a high-risk system. The Blue Jays take that to another an extreme degree. I probably, because middle infield guy who has shown some feel for hit, I'd probably go Beretta. Mm-hmm. Franklin Beretta, the shortstop. He's number four on their list. Number five, sorry.
Number five
on their list.
That's a good pick, yeah.
But DJ Davis, you could see him developing into something. Mitch Ney had a solid year at Bluefield. Mm-hmm. Right. Which way would you go?
Probably Barreto or Ney, I would say. That's a tough call.
But I did want to ask you, since Matt did yeoman's work editing the Prospect Handbook, and we'll have a full Prospect Handbook podcast or a couple coming up. But now that you were done with it, and you read, I believe, at some point, every team, all 900 prospects. Mm-hmm. Was there a team that, when you were done, you thought was a lot better or a lot worse than you, as far as prospects than they were when you kind of went into it? Hmm. Was there a team that jumped out that you said, huh? Because it was interesting to me, well, I'll kind of let you think on that because I'm kind of blindsiding with that question. It was interesting to me as we kind of sat down and were working on the org talent rankings, when it's all said and done, like, there were organizations who I thought were, well, that's better than I thought, or, wow, that's a really difficult one to rank. I thought the Blue Jays were very difficult to rank from the standpoint of, okay, what do you do with an organization where almost everyone's yet to play full season ball? Yes, they've got all kind of upside, but there's got to be some acknowledgement that they're a lot less likely to reach that upside than an organization. The Red Sox, to me, are an organization that have a lot of close to big league ready prospects. If you said, which organization is the closest thing to like what the Cardinals were our number one organization last year. And they lived up to that this year. When you see that Shelby Miller and Carlos Martinez, who's still eligible, but Michael Wacha, who we talked about, Patch Adams, you see a number of these guys who, produced this year. I think the Red Sox are the team that could have the most production in 2014 from their farm system, just because if they need it, they've got two or three pitchers that you could turn to and say that guy could make a significant impact. Jackie Bradley, I feel like, is he's going to be their center fielder. But was there an organization that jumped out to you, good or bad, like, wow, that was better or that was worse than I expected going into it?
I thought the Cardinals kind of tailed off after number four.
Maybe a little more than
Steven Piscotty, just based on all the high impact rookies they've brought up in the last few years.
The back of that Cardinals list is amazingly thin.
Yeah.
Again, and I don't even ding them for it because they promoted so many guys last year.
But, oh yeah, that's not a criticism of their organization or their philosophy.
But no, that the back of that list is role players if you squint really hard and if everything comes together.
I think probably the biggest theme after looking at all these is, no organization was really that deep outside of the top 10. I think the best top 10s were the Red Sox, who we detailed this time, the Pirates,
who we've talked about,
and the Twins, who were up next.
The other one I'll throw in there for the 10 is, I think, the Cubs. Not because they're I think the Cubs tails off quicker than these guys.
And they don't have the pitching balance. I mean, they have probably the best position
player. But position player-wise, you know, and that's one of the things that when we were putting together our organization talent rankings, which, again, you'll see in the handbook, we'll do a revised version, I believe, around minor league preview time during spring training. But the thing that we've come more and more every year to is depth is nice. Depth is important. However, if you get a chance, if it comes down to it, the Rockies are a good example. The Rockies have at the top of the system Jonathan Gray, Eddie Butler, two potential front-end starters. Then you have guys like Rozel Herrera, you know, David Dahl needs to bounce back, but you got guys like that. It drops off pretty quick after that. But if you're comparing that to an organization that's deeper, but doesn't have a Jonathan Gray and Eddie Butler type guys at the top end, take the Jonathan Gray, Eddie Butler, you know, ahead of that, because the one I could go back to is like the Angels system a couple of years ago was pretty thin, but it had Mike Trout at the top of it. We ranked, I think we ranked them around 20 simply on the basis of Trout and almost nothing else. We underranked them though, because while yes, you need more guys than that. If Trout by himself, you know, you have to field a full team and all. But the reality is that Trout by himself is more productive than other organizations are going to get out of their entire farm system. Because if you have that star, there's a lot of value to that. I go back to the first prospect handbook we ever did. Albert Pujols is almost the only guy from the Cardinals' top 30 in that first prospect handbook who had a significantly lengthy big league career. Almost everyone else. Bud Smith, the number one prospect, you know, had a flash in the pan career.
And he got injured.
No hitter, then got injured. But by himself, if you said, which organization would you want to have? You'd want to have Albert Pujols and nothing else over a number of our organization's entire farm systems, because stars are harder to find. That's the one thing I think that jumps out more and more every year.
And I think that the lack of depth, or my perceived lack of depth in the 11 to 30s for these prospects, is kind of symptomatic of just how reliant major league teams are on young talent now. Because it costs so much to acquire major league talent through free agency, through trades, that you're going to bring up your guys because they cost literally a very small fraction of the major league average salary.
Oh, and not only that, but what that jumps out also is that is where depth is important. A lot of the book, a lot of the handbook, you know, when you get into the teens, most organizations, you're talking a lot about guys who project as potential, you know, seventh inning guys or maybe less, or you get some utility infielders and all that. But those guys have value to organizations because even we've seen, what does it cost now to get a guy who can pitch the seventh for you? On the free agent market, quite simply, a one-war, you know, seventh-inning reliever is going to cost you, what, $5, $6 million a year, and you may have to go multiple years for him. And the reality of that is that you compare that to if you can fill that from within with, basically a rookie, you've just saved – that's $4 million plus dollars that you may be able to spend somewhere else.
Particularly one who has options. You can send him up and down, yeah, too.
That's another thing.
You can't do that with a major league vet.
That's a giant advantage because you need that. The worst thing almost that you can have, there's a lot of bad things you can have, but as far as roster construction, if your bullpen is full of guys without options, that's not an untenable situation. At some point in the season, you're going to have a point where you need to just call up an emergency guy or two because you've had a couple of back-to-back, you know, extra inning games, or someone is down for 3 or 4 days, or, you know, maybe a week, and so you don't want to put them on the DL yet. But when that kind of thing happens, having a guy who, even if he's pitching well, you can send to AAA for a week while you bring up, you know, for 10 days, I should say, while you bring up another emergency arm from the minors, there's an incredible value to that. And that's a value that you don't have, like you said, if you're relying on major league veterans who, you know, you're going to lose that guy. That's waiving them, eating the contract, and, you know, if you need that to get the flexibility. But, well, that's another edition of the top 10 draft. We'll be back next week with the AL Central. So we'll be putting together our. I think I know who's going to be the number one pick next year, next week, and you get it. You get it. I would have gladly. I'll trade you Kevin Gausman for the first pick in that draft, because Miguel Sano looking pretty good there. But there's a lot of good guys in the Central, though. It'll be a fun draft. So we'll do AL Central next week. As we said, we'll probably have a Prospect Handbook podcast either next week or the week after that. We'll be wrapping this up with the AL West not too far from now. But again, and we'll be, it's hard to believe, but we're going to be starting the college podcast before long. Mm. Now we're into January. College preview, we're already starting to plan and all. So it's crazy. But thanks again for the download. We hope that all of you had a great holidays. Happy New Year. And we will talk to you soon again on the Baseball America Prospect Handbook podcast.